I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition. After passing customs, I walk into the main part of the Tianjin China Airport and enter a world of people speaking words I cannot understand and signs I cannot read. I must rely completely on my interpreters to help me make basic decisions, like asking advice around where to sightsee or ordering a meal or finding a taxi. By not knowing Chinese or Mandarin, I'm dependent on others and ignorant of much of what is going on around me. In business, the main language is finance. Those that speak and understand it are more able to contribute and make decisions than those that don't. Learn to speak finance and you immediately become more employable and promotable. Well, my next guest on the Business of Intuition is Tracy Bassett, who is all about helping people build their financial literacy. Tracy is on a mission to redefine the world's economic future by increasing the financial literacy of entrepreneurs, also known as financial fitness. With over 20 years experience in the financial service industry, Tracy helps entrepreneurs across all industries, both on and offline. As Chief Financial Fitness Trainer at Bassett Financial Fitness, Inc., Tracy educates and empowers entrepreneurs to take control of and live their financial lives with confidence. As a former executive at TD Bank, one of Canada's Big Five banks, Tracy has worked with and in support of thousands of entrepreneurs to secure the funding they need. This hands-on experience, coupled with her formal financial education, Master's of Business Administration and Chartered Financial Analysis designation, positioned Tracy uniquely to coach about all things related to money. Tracy Bassett on the Business of Intuition. Well, Tracy, thank you for being a guest on the Business of Intuition. I wanted to start off with a question, and then I want to dig into more of the work that you do. But, you know, over the last few years, when it comes to finance, people have been getting stimulus checks. We've had very low inflation, except until recently. Mm-hmm. So it's been really, really low inflation, easy to get money. And also, you know, with the great resignation, we're now hearing people who are getting huge bonuses to be able to jump ship to go to other companies or retaining bonuses and so forth. So I guess I'm wondering from your perspective, how has the mindset around money and finance changed recently?
Oh, that's a loaded question, certainly.
I know. I thought I'd start you off with a curveball.
Absolutely. Well, I'd say the people who've always had kind of an open mind about money, feeling like there was abundance, that if they went out there and they were doing different things, whether from a company side or an individual side, that's always been the case. And I mean, that's showing up right now. But I think a lot of this scares people who are really in that place of scarcity. So if they're trying to hire employees, oh my gosh, how am I going to pay them if now they're demanding even more money because it's really an employee marketplace right now. Now with inflation going higher, things are costing more as well. So that kind of preys on people's concerns around scarcity. And so during the pandemic, I saw clients all across the spectrum. Some were doing really well. Some were holding their own and some were really struggling. So the mindset is kind of all over the place. But I think if you think about your business and you come back to what is it that I do, who do I serve and how can I help them? You have to be able to pivot at all times to be able to bring what they need at the time to them. And so being open to change and open to opportunities is really key.
And I know your focus is on finance and financial fitness and so forth, but mm-hmm. And I want to dig into that some more, but are you seeing, as we are getting more focused on money in the way in which, what can I get for my next job if I so decide to jump ship? Is there a leaning away from culture and more towards this transactional relationship that we have with our employers?
I think so. And I think some of that is warranted. I mean, when I work for someone, I have a contract with them. I work for you, you pay me X amount of dollars. Gone are the days of people signing up for these 30, 40 year careers at companies. And so, especially with young adults that I coach, I talk to them a lot about, look at the complete package though. It's not just about what is that salary, because you might be missing out on a great opportunity with the lower salary that has an awesome benefits package that's going to give you other perks, even mental health counseling, financial planning counseling that is part of that benefit package. So you've got to look a little bit broader and don't just be blinded by a salary or a bonus number, because you've got to explore it. At the end of the day, you're going to spend a lot of time at that work. So you do need to have alignment of values, and you want to make sure you're actually going to enjoy the work. It's not going to suck out your soul just so you got that really high salary or that big bonus to sign.
Because at some point the honeymoon's over. We got the bonus where we have a better lifestyle result of it. Now we're into the day to day. You know, now we're into the relationships of dealing with these people. And if we have a hard time with that, that could in fact sour the whole experience, no matter what sort of money we're being paid.
Absolutely. And the market will turn again. So it's not always going to be an employee's market. It's going to switch back at some point to employers. And so you want to make sure that you are developing some relationship and that you really value the work and you like the people you get to work with and the clients that you serve.
So you mentioned that the pendulum is swung now more towards the employee calling the shots, and you say rightfully so that it's going to swing back. What would the conditions be for it to swing back?
I think that where there's explosive growth in certain industries and as more computers can be used, more AI type tools, where people can be replaced with that kind of stuff, there's going to then be a need, less need for people figuring out other ways to do things. Technology helps us do things better, faster. There's already certain industries, less demand for people. So that would be one of the conditions, as well as if people can outsource to other countries, certainly here in Canada or in the US, that would have a big impact on employees. Because if companies can now do everything remote, why can't they hire from other countries where they can pay less? So right. I'd be thinking about that as well.
So which industries are you seeing there are certain trends for less people, more AI?
Oh, well, even in my background is financial services. I was an executive at TD Bank, one of Canada's big five, big on the Eastern Seaboard in the US. They've outsourced in the financial services industry a lot of their functions remotely outside of Canada. And so the jobs have left Canadian citizens and moved to a lot to India with call centers and anything that they can outsource. There's always going to be a demand to some degree for in-person ability to communicate with people in financial services industry, but that's changing. And consumers want it to change, but that doesn't always line up well with what the employee market wants to see.
Right, exactly. So you mentioned again, financial literacy or financial fitness, and I know you work with a lot of entrepreneurs. What is the reason why some of us are just reticent to understanding what money is? I mean, what's a balance sheet? What's cash flow? What is all that? It's a language like Chinese to me or Mandarin. I don't understand it, and I would rather avoid it. Why do we have that perspective around this thing called finance?
Quite a few reasons. So number one, you form your views around money when you're a little kid. So 5, 6, 7 years of age. Most households are not talking about money in the personal finance world. So you don't get a great primer when you're young and you're starting to form those views. Imagine what was happening in your household at that age, at age 6. Was there yelling? Was there crying? Were there people saying, we don't have money for that? Doors slamming? Were collectors calling? And when you think back to your childhood, those are some of the things that probably still triggers you. How do you feel when you get an invoice pops in on your inbox and your email? Are you getting that pit in your stomach? That's because of what happened when you were a little kid. One of them, school does a really poor job of teaching people about money, both on the personal side, and it's really abysmal on the business side. So you're not getting any training. So I always find it kind of unique that business owners feel like they're supposed to know how to know the finances of their business. Usually they start their business because they're excellent at what they're at. They don't have any business training. So where would they have learned what a balance sheet is, what an income statement is, how to talk to your banker about your financial results? You've received no training. So if you're hearing me today, it's not your fault, number one. But number two, it is your accountability. So you've got to do something and actually bring up your financial acumen. It's no longer okay to say, well, I don't know and nobody told me, so I'm not going to learn. It's your business. Yeah. You need to take responsibility. You can certainly get people to help you and work with professionals, but you need to take accountability for it.
That's a great, great point. I really think you're right on the money on that. And I was thinking about what you just said around what we learn about money starts when we're kids. And I started to think about my own childhood, you know, how was it seen? And it was never really, it never felt like we had a lot. It felt like we had just enough, but not like, you know, we were flush. And I remember once I had this conversation with my dear mom, who I just adore, but she was talking about how she just disliked Bill Gates. And I said, well, why do you like this Bill Gates? He goes, because he has so much money. And so I kind of pressed her and says, well, what is that? Why is that bad? Because, well, that means there's not enough for the rest of us. So there was this message that when you have a lot, that somehow takes away from others who do not. And I made the point, well, you know, he's planning on and giving it, most of it away.
Well, not to us. About,
yeah, well, yeah, exactly. But he's, you know, through foundations and so forth. And, but you know, it started to shift your perspective a little bit. But I guess, how can we, and I teach our kids, okay, say we are not doing well. Let's say that we're having a hard time. And there may be some people who are listening to this podcast who've been let go, or they're in transition, and money right now is tight. And yet we don't want to send to our kids a message around money that's going to follow them for years to come, where they need somebody like you or their therapist to help them reframe the way they see money. How do we communicate our experience with money around our kids if our experience at that time isn't necessarily positive?
I think we want to share some of the reality, not all of the reality. And you can share more the older they are, but there's age appropriate lessons at any turn. Like even when you go to the store, are you using a credit card or a debit card? And do they even know what the difference is? A lot of kids think cards just have money on them and they don't even know it's linked to you actually earning it. And you could sit down and make a grocery list and say, you know what, we have this much in our budget, and explain what a budget is to spend on groceries this week. What are the most important things if we're getting some extras or fun things in the grocery, some treats? What are the things you'd like to have? And maybe have it like kind of a partnership where you're kind of working together. So where you can share a little bit that, you know, lost our job. We're working really hard to get a new one. We don't need to be panicked or worried. Everything's going to be okay. But we do need to be a little bit more conservative or cautious about our spending. And so we're going to make sure we have the things we need, but not the extra things. And so it's not about creating this fearful thing where there's crying and yelling and you can't have that. There's no money. But still letting them know that, you know what, in real life, people have boundaries. There is usually a budget. And sometimes the budget is set with that's how much money you make. And sometimes it's because, yes, this was the paycheck, but we're putting money away for your education and for our future family vacation. And so I would encourage people to bring it up as early as you can with your kids in good times and bad times. Gauge the reaction. You might want to follow up with them too if you're talking to them and say, are you still thinking about that? If you notice they seem a little bit off, keep the dialogue going. Don't make it kind of this mystery that you maybe talk about once and it never comes back up again. If you sense them feeling something, let them dig into it a little bit. And I've just had a guest on my podcast, the Young Money Podcast, Rishi Vamdat. He has YouTube video series called Easy Peasy Finance and Investing, and he makes great books and videos for kids. And so that would be a great way that you'd be able to help educate them as well, where you don't need to be the expertise. Because I know for a lot of parents, it's very challenging when they haven't been taught to be able to then relay information to their children.
What was the name of that again? Easy Peasy something or other?
He has Easy Peasy Investing, and I think it's Easy Peasy Finance. And his stuff is great for any age. It is geared towards kids. He's a 12-year-old. He creates two little characters and he creates his own script. His parents vet them and then they help him with his animation and his weekly YouTube videos. But they're great lessons for anybody. But that kind of takes the burden off of trying to explain everything when maybe you yourself don't know.
That's great. Really great resource. Thanks for that. And I'm also just picking up is obviously that when we start thinking about money and we start talking about it, we are in some ways inviting conflict and fear and the triggers that we will sometimes have. And so I could see why people may not necessarily want to talk about money because it's going to bring up some stuff. When we talk about divorces, we talk about people splitting up their relationships. Sometimes what we find is that the topic that gets that relationship to unravel is around finance, is around money. So you can see why there may be historic or even cultural baggages that we carry regarding this topic. So if I'm a sole proprietor,
yes,
I got my own business where I just started, right? And I want to ask you another question regarding a person who works for a company. So I'm a sole proprietor. I got this business running. I'm excited. I love what I'm doing. I don't know much about finance. For now, I can't afford to hire somebody to do finance. It's going to be me. I'm going to be doing the bill paying as well as the sales. I'm doing it all. What kinds of things do I need to know about finance? Or what kinds of financial statements should I be able to understand?
Number one is an income statement. It also goes by profit and loss, P&L. And so basically we're talking about all of your sales for a given period and all of the expenses. So all the money you're bringing in and all the expenses going out from an accounting standpoint. Right. Second one is a balance sheet that shows all of the things you own, assets, things of value in your company, as well as all of the people you owe money to and the equity that you've built up. And most business owners ignore that one. So start with
meaning the equity part,
the whole balance sheet, actually.
Okay. Yeah. Understood. And, I think that people get confused about it. They don't quite understand the top and the bottom and how they have to balance out, you know, but, and it's very different. It's a moment in time versus the P&L statement is over a period of a month or a year or a quarter.
What about cash flow statement? Yeah. So not necessarily the official cash flow statement, but you need to absolutely understand the way cash flows in and out of your business. And the easiest way I can explain it is money comes in, money goes out, and the timing that it happens is what you need to understand. So for instance, if I'm in an event planning business, I'm not starting a job for anybody unless they give me a 50% deposit. So I get 50% cash up front. I'm not doing my event on the day of until they pay me the other 50%. So I've got all my cash up front. However, if I'm a consultant and I'm doing a contract with a big corporation, they're going to ask me to do a whole bunch of work before I actually send them an invoice. And then it may take them 30, 60 days to pay me. And so now I've got this kind of lag in my cash. And so it's so important that you understand what's normal for your industry and what it's actually happening like in your business. And so some people need to put tighter controls and procedure around following up on invoices. I've worked with a lot of clients who actually are not good at getting their invoices out in the first place, which causes cash flow problems. And then dealing with those people who can't pay or won't pay. So just understanding what the cash flow cycle is, that can actually help you decide how you're going to price your offerings. And it might encourage you to change the way you're doing it and come up with a different way if you find you're having cash flow challenges. And the final piece on cash flow that I want everybody to remember, when you're doing well and your business is growing, that's amazing. But growth is very hungry and eats cash. So you need to make sure you've got lots of cash around or access to cash in order to keep that growth going.
Good point. I love that. That's very good. Okay. So let's say now I work for a large company. I'm a mid-level manager. I own a P&L, you know, I own a department and that floats up to the parent company. What sort of financial acumen do I need to have in order to survive and thrive in that kind of environment?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I certainly saw it firsthand when I was working at TD Bank. I worked for the chief risk officer. So we were doing things constantly with the senior executive and the external directors of the board. I saw who got to go in front of the board and the senior executive and do presentations and present their ideas and who didn't. And it came down to financial acumen. So when you're running a department and you're responsible for even a piece of a P&L, so maybe it's a lot of expenses around technology or around people, human capital, you've got to be able to understand how your group fits into the larger picture for the big company and be able to, when you're pitching strategies and plans, understand and be able to articulate the impact to the company. How much revenue is it going to increase? How much are the expenses going to be? What would be the potential return on investment if an outlay is required up front? And you want to get really comfortable with the language of finance. And so it's like learning Mandarin, like you mentioned, or we're going to learn Spanish. We have to put in the time and the practice to understand the right words so that we can be fluent in that language of finance. If you're in a public company, it's pretty easy to get your hands on all that information. There's analysts writing about the company, so you can read all those kinds of official reports and get very comfortable privately without having to ask a lot of questions. And take an interest. Listen when the leaders speak. They're telling you all you need to know about the strategy and how it's fitting financially. If you're in a private company, people are still giving clues. So ask some more questions and show your interest. And always be thinking about how does my department whether it's a revenue driver or not, how does it fit into the larger organization and how can I help them achieve their goals and try to be able to be conversant from a financial standpoint around it. And so it doesn't take too long to develop that financial acumen if you're interested and motivated. And I guarantee it's going to actually increase your upward trajectory in the organization.
I think you're absolutely right. I remember for about 10 years, I did some training with Marriott around the globe, and it was a really fun gig. Got us go to some great places and meet some great people. But part of the training we did was around financial acumen. And we were always encouraging people at the end of this, you know, 3 or 4 day seminar was go sit with your controller, go sit with your VP, mm-hmm. go sit with your internal consultant and have them walk you through the P&L statement, have them explain to you what this means. And then also, how does what you do relate to that piece of paper? Where do you show up? What line item do you live in? And so that was one of the things that we were always trying to encourage people was to build their financial acumen in the reality in which they are working so that it makes sense
to them. Absolutely. Yeah, that's a great tip. And then accountants and the controllers departments, they're usually really happy to help educate people because if they can help you, there's probably some time where you're going to be able to help them. So maybe they need access to information or you guys are working together on the budget for the next year or a capital expenditure plan. So the better you work together, it's great. And the more you understand, it's going to make their job easier too.
And I think that's right on. And I think that some people just don't want to feel stupid. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't want to come to you, Tracy, because I know I'm supposed to know what a cash flow statement is. I'm supposed to know what the, you know, what a balance sheet is, and I don't. And I don't want to expose myself to you because, you know, there's, you know, a bit of me that feels embarrassed about that. There's this, you know, imposter syndrome going on. So, you know, is there some sort of question or statement we can make to these people to sort of diffuse that and make that conversation easier? What do you think about that?
Absolutely. And so some of the questions I provide my clients with, whether they're asking their accountant or if you're in that corporate setting and you're going to ask the controller, when you look at these numbers, what do they say to you?
Put it back on that.
Are there some trends that you're seeing here that you think the company should sustain or I should sustain if I'm the business owner? What would you be worried about if you were me? If you were in my role, what would you be worried about? And so it's very hard when you don't have the knowledge to come up with the questions. But if you can ask those kind of really broad-based ones, then you can get them talking and then you can follow up on things that they are actually saying back to you. And you can jot down those things and go away and do a little bit of research, come back. I hear complaints all the time from my clients that their accountants aren't teaching them. And I tell them it's not their job to teach you. Their job is to do your taxes and your financial statements. You may pay them extra for an education, but that's not actually their job. So
yeah,
so be clear.
That's
on
a great
it.
Point. And on the flip side, from the financial side, those of you who are out there who are the controllers or the finance directors or the VPs or the CFOs, I'm reflecting on a podcast that I had with a guy named Dieter Gable, who is a owner of a consulting firm that basically works in IT. And so it's sort of a corollary that his whole point is IT professionals need to speak the language of business. They need to speak the language of the mission to be able to bridge that gap. And so conversely, I think that's also true for people who are in finance. We need to be able to not always speak in a financial speak, but we need to be able to translate it. So those who are not financially astute the way we might be, that we can hear it, understand it. Like, why does this matter? Why is this particular number, you know, impact our business, impact our customers, impact the employees, whatever? Make those translations, I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. The person who can explain things at a very common language level is going to be successful, whether it's in technology or in the financial side. And it's all about helping people understand so everyone can accomplish goals. So however you can do that, that's what you should be doing. And so really focusing on keeping it simple. Even today in our chat, I haven't used too many financial terms.
No, you did not. You've done well. So in the translation topic right now, I'm thinking about the younger generation, the people in my kids. I have one 21-year-old son, and I'm thinking about his generation and even younger than that. The opinion that I and many would have is that they have been trained to be focused on the short term. Everything is so quick. We would send a text. It comes back to us right away. I was telling him in a drive yesterday that when I was younger, before the internet, to get information, you had to write a letter. And then you'd wait for the letter to come back. Now we just simply Google it. And so we've been trained and our brains have been rewired to expect something that is really fast. In fact, we get frustrated when we don't get that immediate gratification. And the phones have been, in a way, continuing to propagate that desire. So I wonder, my opinion is that's transferred into our way in which these younger people view money, that I want the immediate satisfaction of being able to spend it. You know, saving is something that I do to put off gratification for down the road, but I've got $300 in my checking account now. Let's go do something with it. It's immediate gratification. So how do we then translate that acumen, that need for savings, that need for thinking longer term to a generation that's so focused on the immediate right now?
I would actually say a lot of the research shows that younger individuals are less reluctant to take risk with their money. So certainly there's going to be those who are trying to make it rich quick overnight with cryptocurrency or something like that. And they're trying to do that. But a lot are actually afraid to lose their money, so they don't do anything. And so the biggest question I get from my young money listeners is actually, what's investing? How do I do investing? How do I do it properly? And so I think there's a lot of interest in there. One thing I think is missing is kind of critical thinking skills. And you mentioned that, like, you just Google it, you get the answer. Well, the internet shoots you back answers, but you have to have enough discretion to figure out, is this the right answer or is this the wrong answer? And to be able to see, is this legitimate? And so many young people are getting swayed by influencers, so they're not necessarily doing their due diligence. So it's about teaching people to be critical thinkers, determine if this person is actually of substance, if they know what they're talking about. If someone was selling makeup last week and this week they're selling a trading platform, is that the right person to get investing advice from? And it happens all the time. So being able to think for yourself and get information from a variety of sources and actually make up your own mind, I think, is really key. And on the Young Money podcast, we try to bring a lot of guests with different thoughts so people can hear from themselves. They also like to hear from themselves. So young people learn a lot from each other. So it's great can talk about missteps, and if we can talk a little bit about the speculation that happens with cryptocurrency around investing. And the research actually shows that people who actively trade all the time, their returns are lower than those who hold steady with a long-term view in mind. So
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking about that idea that we will need to develop that sort of critical thinking skills that you just said, whether that's a young person or not. And sometimes we sort of see and have the paradigm that if it's black and white, if it's on the page, it must be real. You know, like we'd always would, if it was written down in the newspaper, it must be gospel. If it's a spreadsheet and it shows these numbers, it must be right. Right. And so we sort of have that perspective that what's written has to be accurate. And of course, we've been proven wrong in our society more and more so. But I think the same sort of, this is more of a statement than a question, but, you know, to question even our financial statements is to get that critical thinking. Like I've heard people say that, you know, finance is not a science, it's more of an art. It's an interpretive skill set versus a factual skill set. And so if we come to these numbers and question them, and I think that with large companies, the expectation is you got to stand up the reasoning for your spreadsheets, for your budget, for your P&L, and give reason and story behind why you came up with those numbers. Because just because you put them down doesn't mean that people are going to accept them.
Absolutely. Everything should be challenged. I mean, I used to be an adjudicator for 8 years. I've ripped apart thousands of business plans, thousands of projections for customers looking to get loans for different reasons. And if in a conversation they tell you that, yeah, my customers pay in usually 60 to 75 days, but they show me a cash flow forecast that shows them getting paid in 15 days, that doesn't line up. So we've got to stick with the facts, make sure that the numbers are really based in reality. And the fun thing I get to do with my clients is I assess their financial performance. So a lot of the statements are of poor quality because they're small businesses, and that's just what tends to happen. Right. But then getting them to fill in the blanks of what was happening in the business at that time. What were you doing? What were the things that were happening? We can kind of marry the two up and see what was really the story. And I can give them advice on how to improve their actual reporting of that. But then they start to understand, when I was doing that thing, here's where it's showing up now.
I like the way you put that the financial statements really are a story that's being told about the business. That's really great. I love that a lot. I guess so. You mentioned that you used to work for a large company. Why go independent? You've got your own company now. You're doing well. What was the reason for you to switch gears?
So I was there 16 years, great clients, worked with great people. Like often happens in large companies, my seat was taken away from the table.
I got it.
Had a really fair severance, but instead of going back to get a comparable job at another institution and people were calling at that time, I thought maybe there's something out there that I can do a little bit different. Hmm. So I packaged up all the things I like to do. I've loved money since I was a little kid. Since 6, 7 years of age, I've been really rational about money. I knew that if you got it, you could get things and do things that you wanted. And we talked about money a lot in my household. So I'm kind of the exception in terms of how I was raised and how I feel about money. So it's always been my personal mission to help people understand it, whether they be individuals or business owners. I wanted to keep all of the wonderful work I'd done with business owners and keep that going and get back to the clients. Because being an adjudicator, you don't get to talk to as many clients as you like. So kind of packaged everything up. And I'm a professor as well at a college, and I teach students to become financial planners.
That's excellent. Fantastic. Great work. What are some of the most common mistakes you see people make?
Business owners or individuals?
Business owners. Let's go with that.
Number one, not taking accountability for the financial side of their business. Mm. So I've already said it. Even if you don't know, you've heard me say today, you've got to get on it. Yeah. Two, commingling your personal and your business accounts. It's already hard to figure that out. So don't make it an extra mess by putting everything together. Because when your business is struggling, you're not going to know if it's the business is failing or your lifestyle is just draining too much money from it. So keep that straight. And then the third one is that business owners don't generally seek credit soon enough. So as soon as you start your business, I think you should go out and access credit, even if it's a really small amount and it's backed by your personal guarantee, because you're going to start the clock on the credit history for your business and you want to get that going as soon as possible so that when you actually need more money, you have a track record and people can rely on that.
So you're not saying that even if I don't need it, it's just basically my financial credit scores start.
Get it going for the company.
Yeah, I get it. I guess that's a good point. I'm wonderful. So Tracy, this is great work that you're doing. What can people do to connect with you, learn more about you, talk a little bit more about your podcast, any ways that they can reach out to you? I'd love for them to be able to have that information.
Absolutely. So best place to reach out to me is on LinkedIn. Tracy has an E and Bissett has 2 S's, 2 T's. Really responsive to messages there. You get links to all my socials, our website and everything. Young Money Podcast is one of those links that you'll see. We've been going strong for 4 years, just issued episode 226.
And that's congrats.
Thank you. Geared for young adults, kind of age 18 to 30-ish, and lots of people who love them, because we find lots of parents and grandparents listen. And I'm learning new things all the time. This year, I've learned a lot about cryptocurrency and non-fungible tokens, those NFTs. So fun for me to stay abreast of everything that's going on. And then on LinkedIn, we actually have a show for business owners, Biz Money Talks, which is a live show on LinkedIn and Facebook that usually happens weekly.
Fantastic. Great work.
Thank
but
you.
I wish you the very best. And, you know, when we recorded this little interview, it was right around the holiday season. So I hope you're having some time with family and friends.
Thank you so much. Appreciate the opportunity, Dean. Have a great day.
You too.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.